keeping your family and property safe from fire. And fireworks. The 4th of July is on a Wednesday this year, so the week of celebrating is already underway. And already there have been mishaps due to fireworks, including in Bremen, where stray fireworks apparently set fire to a lobster boat. Other fires in Maine this past month were caused by a number of things, including dryer lint, smoking while on oxygen, propane explosions, and arson. At least one person has died in a fire in the past month, and others have been severely burned. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we speak with fire experts about how to avoid fire and what to do if fire breaks out in your home or on your property. What simple things can each of us do to be a little safer this holiday week and throughout the year? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Depending on local restrictions, people can legally set off fireworks in Maine, but they are dangerous. Each year, nationwide, fireworks lead to more than 18,000 fires, as well as dozens of injuries and even deaths. Today, we're going to learn about fire safety, not just for the 4th of July and not just for fireworks, but for the entire year. In the studio with me, Joseph Thomas. He is Maine's state fire marshal. And Kent Nelson is also with us. You've got a long title, Kent, a forest ranger specialist and excess property manager for the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry with the Maine Forest Services Forest Protection Division. Did I get that right?
You did. You could have just said forest ranger. That would have been fine.
As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about how to handle fireworks? Do you like campfires or bonfires in the summertime? Phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. You know, I'm always so happy to have you all in the program because even though we hear about fire safety from the time we're little kids and we all remember Smokey Bear and all of that, there are still so many fires and so many fatal fires. And we'll start by just getting an update. You know, you both have been really busy. Kent, how many brush and wildfires has the Maine Forest Service responded to so far this year?
Well, we've had about a little less than 400 fires so far this year that have burned.
Wait, 400 fires this year?
Wildfires, yeah.
Okay, go on.
And that they burn over 600 acres, which is more acreage than we burned all last year. So it was a busy spring fire season.
And what have been the most common causes of those wildfires?
It's usually people who have good intentions. They're trying to clear, get rid of the brush that has fallen over the winter, and they have a brush burn, and they get a permit, and they're following the law, but they fail to put it out. They think it's out, and it's not really out, and it kicks up the next day and escapes. So we have to be real careful to make sure that our fires are completely out.
So what's your advice? If you think it's out, just get out the hose and douse it a little more anyway,
yeah,
if you can?
Yeah, I wish we were on video. I could show you my little routine that I do when Smokey Bear is with me. But basically, you stir the coals, and you pour water, and then you go away for 5 minutes, and you come back and check it three times. I mean, it's that thorough, and it's that important.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it. 400 fires so far. Joe Thomas, there were so many house and apartment fires this spring. I know of at least one fatal fire, but you said there's actually been many.
We're actually at this halfway point now. We're pretty much where we were all of last year. So, you know, it's troubling to see the numbers that we're seeing as far as the fire fatalities are concerned. I'm really hoping that we've hit this point early in the year. I mean, it's average, but it does concern me that we see the numbers we do this early in the year.
So how many people have died in structure fires in Maine this year?
We're at 15 already,
oh,
and we're halfway.
What are the causes of the fires that you're seeing, the fatal fires you're seeing?
We've gone everywhere. I mean, we've gone through the beginning of the year seasonally. We've seen the heating as a result of the late winter fires. We've seen careless use or disposal of smoking materials. We've got smoking on oxygen. Obviously, we still have arson, which is a problem. We're seeing everything as we always do.
And I saw one of them was a dryer lint fire, which was interesting to me because even though I always clean the lint out of my dryer filter, you don't hear about that very often anymore, but it's still a real danger.
There is a practice that you really need to think about, especially we recommend you do it two times a year when you actually do your spring and fall, you know, heavy house cleaning, is that you pull that dryer vent off the back of the dryer and make sure that's cleaned out. People think about the lint filter that's in the machine itself, but you take from the backside of that dryer through that tube to the outside of the house can really get packed in there with lint materials.
Kent, even though we have had some rain this past week, it has been a really dry spring, and we have hot weather coming up. How is the fire danger right now? What are you looking at for this coming week? What are your concerns?
Well, most of the southern Maine is in low fire danger, so that's good. But as you get further north, they're at moderate. That rain certainly did help kind of wet things up and moist things up, but it doesn't take long for it to dry out again. And the most common type of wildfires are human caused, so we've got a lot of people out in the woods enjoying them. And we encourage them to do that, but they just really need to be careful with all outdoor fires.
Okay. Joe, Maine legalized the sale of fireworks in 2011. What have we seen since then? Have we seen a spate of fires and injuries since then, or are people in Maine pretty careful with their fireworks?
Well, as I say, you know, prior to them being legalized, we didn't really have numbers to go on. So the numbers that we reflect from the time that they became legal forward are now really becoming our benchmark. So what I am seeing, I'm seeing consistent numbers. I'm not seeing the great apocalypse that was, you know, the world isn't coming to an end. I will say people are there are fires being caused by fireworks. There are people being injured by fireworks. And, you know, last year for 2017, we had seven structure fires that were caused by fireworks, careless use of fireworks, that amounted to damage in excess of $102,000. So, you know, they can be dangerous, and we ask people if they are going to use them to use the precautions that come with the product and that we have available on our website.
All right. Well, we're talking about fire safety. We have the state fire marshal, Joe Thomas, with us, also forest ranger Kent Nelson. What are your thoughts or questions about fire prevention, fire safety in your area? Kent, I know that one of the things you all focus on, and we've put a link to this on our Facebook page and will on our webpage, is all the people in Maine who live in rural areas, whether it's a camp in the woods or just a house that's pretty far off the road and not near a fire hydrant. How do people think about building or keeping their property in a rural area differently than maybe somebody who's in a city or a suburb?
That's a great question, and it's one that we get asked very often. And we love our trees in Maine. It's the most forested state in the nation. But you need to be smart about how you let them grow near your structures. For example, you don't want a lot of softwood trees within 30 feet of your structure. And that includes saplings and the seedlings, the little ones and the big ones.
Is that because a spark from the fireplace may...
Or a wildfire could creep along the ground and get into those trees and then ignite your structure. So softwoods in general have a lot more resins in the bark, so it's more volatile. So we ask people to, you know, keep their brush at bay.
Keep your brush at bay. Also, if you want to, there's some things you can do with, like, making sure you have a long hose, right?
Right. But we request that, you know, you let the professionals deal with a big forest fire because they can be very dangerous, too.
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought this up because this is something I want to talk about and from both of your perspectives. Joe, at what point, if you have a fire in your stove or something has a spark, say, has come out of the fireplace and hit the rug or something happens, at what point do you get the fire extinguisher and try to put it out yourself? And at what point do you call the fire department? I know a lot of people are hesitant to call because, frankly, they're kind of embarrassed.
My preferred recommendation is call. I got to tell you, you know, I understand that people have the capabilities to use fire extinguishers in their home. The problem that I see is they first of all, they never use it other than the first time they pull it out of the box, they read the directions, hung it on the wall. It's covered in dust. It's never been moved since. It's never been operated. And somebody's going to make an immediate judgment about putting that fire extinguisher into action when they've never experienced the use of that extinguisher before. Honest, I think my preference is unless they are totally competent and sufficient with the use of the extinguisher, the first thing they do is get everybody out of the house and then call the fire department.
Okay.
The judgment of using that fire extinguisher, especially in the kitchen, is that you're able to extinguish the size of a pan on fire with that extinguisher, not attack an entire kitchen fire, so to speak.
Okay. And what about what you mentioned earlier, Kent, the brush fire that maybe is gotten out of control or even grown? At what point do you call, especially if you live in a rural area, you got a volunteer fire department, you don't want to be pulling people out of work? How do you make that judgment?
Well, you have to be safe. First of all, you shouldn't be burning on a day where the wind could allow the fire to escape. And we have a new fire danger weather system that has been in place since 1st of April that's been helping with that. So people kind of know how dry it is out there. It's on a scale from 1 to 5, low to extreme, high fire danger. So if they follow that and get the proper permit, they shouldn't have too much of a problem. But if it does get away, you need to call 911. And if you're in an unorganized township, then the Maine Forest Service is coming. So
tell me about the new system. How is it different than the old system?
Well, we replaced all the weather stations with modern, updated ones. Some of the weather stations dated back to the 90s, and they can also be accessed at any time, real time. So you could kind of check on the fire danger, whether in your community, based on the closest weather station.
Okay.
And that report comes out every morning at about 9.
At about 9. And can somebody look that up on the internet as well? All right. Let's talk about some of the more common causes. Kent, you just had last week in Danforth a fire caused by a meth lab. How often are you coming across that?
Fortunately, that's pretty rare. But as these criminals think, they want to be away from law enforcement, and that's a good place to hide, I guess. But they use a lot of dangerous chemicals, and they're not always following safe precautions, and this thing does happen once in a while. So fortunately, we could get there fairly quick and help to get it out.
And Joe, we had a case where people were injured, I believe it was in Waldoboro, with a propane tank explosion. A lot of people use propane in their homes, either for heat or for some sort of stove. If I hear that, I think, do I not use propane? How does one make sure the propane use is safe?
Well, you know, in the case of that particular incident, you had some folks who were up from Massachusetts actually opening up a summer home for another lady that actually owned the property. And I go back to preventive maintenance. If you have, I mean, in our case, we have routine service done to our utilities in our home, spring and fall. And I would encourage people to do that, especially in a case like this, where you've got something with, a home environment with utilities that have been shut off for the season. Now they're being reactivated. I would encourage people to get a hold of a, reputable technician and have them check out the systems. Are there any leaks? Are there any problems with it? Is it working properly? You know, it might take a few dollars to get it done, but in my estimation, that's the safest way to do it.
So you want your chimney cleaned every year?
I do.
And you want someone to come out if you have any kind of gas hookup and check that. What else is on that checklist?
Your furnace should be on there as well. That's one of the biggest used appliances in your home, and we still have furnace fires.
Mm. And, of course, smoke detectors.
Absolutely.
Every room, right?
Right?
I've had you on before, Joe. Every room. Fresh battery, or even better, if you can, to have them hooked up to one another.
You know, we're still working with the Red Cross, and we're up over a total of over 13,000 smoke detectors have been installed as a result of that effort. 13,000 detectors that either were installed in someone's home that didn't work or were out of date, or they had no detectors at all.
So you're saying we're still doing it, because you and I have talked about this now for 3 years on this program, but it's still going on.
Still
if you
going.
Want smoke detectors, if you can't afford them, you call the Red Cross or your local fire department, and someone will come out and put some in your home, right?
That's correct.
All right. We're talking about fire and fire safety. This is Maine Calling. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Masonic Charitable Foundation, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. Ollie's Trolley, offering narrated daily sunset Cadillac Mountain tours in July and August. Tickets and more information at ollie'strolley.com. And New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
Hello, it's me, President Trump.
And me, Bernie Sanders.
And there's only one thing that we agree on, and that's that everyone should listen to the Capitol Steps July 4th radio show. It is going to be stupendous.
I haven't heard a radio show this funny since my good friend Thomas Alva Edison told me about wireless transmission.
And I'm going to be singing many patriotic songs, and I know all the words, believe me.
So tune in to the Capitol Steps 4th of July special right here on this public radio station.
You can hear that Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock and again Wednesday evening at 7 right here on Maine Public Radio. This July and August, Maine Public is again partnering with Darlings for a summer book drive for curious young readers 12 and under. Books may be dropped off at Maine Public and Darlings locations. We'll also have a public festival that will include Maine Public on-air staff reading to children, photo opportunities with the PBS character Daniel Tiger, and Darlings Ice Cream for a Cause truck. It takes place at the Hamden Children's Day on Saturday, August 11th. For more information, visit mainepublic.org and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, fire safety and prevention. Joining me in the studio, Kent Nelson, a forest ranger specialist with the Maine Forest Services Forest Protection Division, and Joe Thomas, Maine's state fire marshal. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to the call, though, I want to talk to you about one more thing. And Joe, that is planning. You know, those of us who have children, our kids come home from school, they've been to Fire Safety Day, they tell us to make a plan, and we do. But how does that planning change as we move from being a family with young kids in the home to aging? Is there a different way to think about planning for an emergency?
Well, there's no question about it. In fact, you know, we've been working very, very closely with Maine agencies on aging, AARP, all of the associated disciplines and professionals that are working with our older population. And I say older now because really we're looking at quote-unquote Maine's aging in place. And you're talking basically from 60 years old up, which I now fit into that category well. And what we're seeing is the concern that I have is that, yes, Maine, because of our aging population and the availability of assisted living and all other types of housing accommodations for aging people, we're seeing people staying at home right through all age cohorts. And what happens is we talk about aging in place and we want them to do it safely, i.e., fall hazards, trip hazards, you know, other types of hazards that you associate. But we don't think about the fire hazards. And what we are seeing is 62% of our fire fatalities in the state are showing that they're age populated from 60 years of age up. And what we're seeing that is also concerning is when an elderly person of age is lost in a fire, it's not just a single individual. It's usually a couple, the man and the wife, who are not able to get out. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and Underwriters Laboratory have recently done scientific tests on modern construction materials and furnishings in homes. when I started in the fire service in 1973, for us to see flashover in a building, in other words, when everything that's consumable by fire in the room ignites and you literally have a flashover, you were looking in the area of 18 to 24 minutes. These two recent studies that were done in the laboratory with modern furnishings showed flashover in 3 to 5 minutes now. They off-gas so quickly that it's almost impossible to be able to react to them. So what we're seeing is that time constraint from the time that you're notified with a working smoke detector that you need to get out of that house, your time of escape has really, really been reduced now.
So are you what are you recommending folks to think about as they age, to practice getting out of the house in the dark, for example?
Absolutely, to really practice to do everything that they can or would need to do in a real circumstance. For example, and this is just a thought process, you live in that home that you've always lived in all your entire life, and it may have been passed down for generations. Atypically, where are the bedrooms? They're on the second floor, and there are stairs down the front, stairs down the back that you go up and down, just ordinary movement every single day. But think about the fact that now, as someone of age, myself included, I don't move as fast as I used to. And for me to react to something going on in my home, be able to acclimate myself to what I need to be able to do based on the situation, and then to be able to get out in the time frame that I've got before that fire can reach flashover, the time is against us to be able to do it the way we did at 20 years old. So we need to change the way we think.
And get out right away.
Yeah, for example, I mean, in some cases, we've seen this situation when we did home visits with the smoke detector installation program. And part of the conversation that we have you ever thought about moving your bedroom downstairs? You know, you got a dining room that's sitting there with a big table, and obviously by everything that's sitting on top of the table, it's not used for dining. So rather than take that chance that you would not be able to escape from the second floor now under a fire situation, what about moving your bed down to that room and at least have the availability of being on the first floor? And even if proximity needed, you stand a possible chance of at least being able to get out the window.
Thank you, Joe. We're going to go to Joshua, who's calling from Waterboro. Hi, Joshua. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a 911 dispatcher. And I just wanted to speak to the point that currently the state of Maine has enacted some emergency fire protocol dispatching standards. So to kind of inform the callers that may be listening or the people that may be listening, we now have a set standard of questions that we have to ask through for each emergency call that comes in. So it would just be my point to everybody listening would be if you could please be patient with the 911 call takers that you're speaking with. Help is on the way while we're speaking to you, but there is a whole new set of questions that we have to flow through to get to a proper dispatch of the emergency services out to people.
Joshua, what is something someone might hear if they call a dispatcher that they haven't heard before?
Well, it's basically, it's all the same. There's slight changes from different agencies, but you're going to have the address of the emergency asked, what your telephone number is. Those two are primarily the first questions. In case we get disconnected with you, we can send help out to that address and try to call the telephone number back. With the new protocols that are enacted, we're going to ask for your name, and then that's when we would get into what type of emergency situation you have. So there's a variant of questions that range from structure fires to outside fires to just miscellaneous service calls. Your basement's flooded. We have questions that we can ask for that.
All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Joshua. I appreciate it. We'll move on to Ann, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, I was given a box of things from a friend who recently passed away, and inside were a bunch of fireworks. I don't want to set them off, and I don't know if they're safe. What's the best way to dispose of them?
There's really two ways. You can do it by the method that we use, which is really a DEP, EPA type of recommendation, and that is to simply soak them for a significant period of time in water until they're completely saturated, and then under their regulations, they can actually be disposed of with household trash. The other possibility is, if you really want to not even have to handle them, is to give our office a call, and we'll have somebody come out and pick them up and dispose of them properly.
Good question, Ann. Thanks for calling. We'll move up to Patricia calling from Frenchville. Hi, Patricia. Go ahead.
Hi. Three comments. I just love your show all the time.
Thank you.
And this is very timely. And we, this past winter, just had our house all hardwired for smoke detectors. I used to be a nurse, and so we always had training on fires. And I'm so thankful I know how to use a fire extinguisher properly. And because we heat with wood, it was imperative that we have smoke detectors that were hardwired. But my main comment is, I'm a baby boomer, and I grew up in the Mid-Coast area with uncles and family that were all dairy farmers. And every spring, we burned the fields. And we hardly ever, I don't remember hearing any incidents. All the men wore Indian packs. All us kids had buckets with brooms that were soaked. And people knew common sense back then. I think as we get into a more technological age, people don't have common sense for safety. And when I was an ER nurse, I can't tell you how many kids we had come in with burns on their hands from sparklers. It's just, where's the common sense anymore? Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Kent?
Well, that's interesting you would bring up kind of the good old days when the fields were burned in the spring. But one thing I noticed about your description of them is you said there was lots of relatives, lots of people, and they were willing to take time off from work or whatever they were doing to make sure that fire was safe. And the fact that they did it probably every year, they knew the conditions. And it is a matter of experience that you can do safe. You can do these type of burns safely. Matter of fact, the Maine Forest Service does a fair amount of prescribed burns safely to get rid of those hazardous fuels when the conditions are right. So that's basically what they were doing. And I agree that times have changed, and it's hard to get people away from technology to learn these old skills, but this is the age we live in.
Thanks, Patricia, for your call. An email from Maxine. Another fire hazard to think about are rags soaked with paint thinner or stripper. A lot of folks with the nice weather turn to doing painting projects outside and improperly dispose of rags that can spontaneously combust or be ignited easily. Joe, what's your advice? I'm doing some painting outside. What do I do with my rags?
Put them in a closed container and leave them in there until they're completely dried out. A lot of people, you'll see them working around, and they do have, you know, rags filled with turpentine for wiping the paint off their hands, et cetera, whatever they're doing. And they simply leave them right there with the rest of the materials. And lo and behold, spontaneous ignition will do its thing. So definitely when you're done, best thing to do is in a closed container until they dry out and evaporate.
And should that closed container be metal?
Preferably, yes. Yeah.
Okay. We'll go to Anne Marie calling from Westbrook. Hi, Anne Marie. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. My question goes back to fire safety in the house. The house I live in has two rather large chimneys, but inactive fireplaces. And I wonder if there is still regular maintenance that should be done, or if there is still fire hazard in the chimneys, even if they're not being used.
Even if they're not being used, I still assume that your furnace is attached to one of those chimneys for venting purposes. So what I would suggest is that they should still be looked at from the standpoint of, are they sufficiently still in good shape enough to maintain the draft that you need to have to be able to exhaust the carbon monoxide fumes that could be being displaced from your furnace? Many of your fireplaces can be closed up, but that draft in that chimney is what's going to cause those fumes and vapors that you have from any other source to be able to escape the chimney. I still recommend that it be looked at to make sure that you still have the proper draft.
All right, Anne-Marie, thanks for your call. Say on Facebook says, for those of us who live in rural wooded areas but do not have much money to bring in professionals, what are some resources that we might use to have someone come out and look at or even fell trees that might be potential fire hazards? Is there anyone through the Department of Forestry, for example, who might be able to do a low-cost inspection?
That's a good question. We are somewhat limited in our resources. We can't come out and do fuels reduction work on individual homes per se, but we do have a community program. So it works like this. If you have a community with, let's say, 100 homes or camps, you contact me at the Maine Forest Service, and we come out and do some wildfire risk assessments, and we kind of put together a report with recommendations. And then if it seems feasible, we can help with some of the brush chipping that might be needed. But the onus is still really on the homeowner to do some of that work.
Okay. We have an email from Petra. There has been a recall of many Kid brand, is it Kid or Kitty brand?
Kidda
brand fire extinguishers, where you're supposed to replace the extinguishers and then they'll send you new ones. And then after you've gotten the new and improved ones, you need to send back the old ones. Good for people to know about this, about the recall. But I received my 4 new extinguishers recently and was surprised to see that the packaging was so lousy. One of them had partially discharged in the box in shipping. Another was below the full level on the gauge. I will call the company so they can replace these, but this is frustrating. So what can you tell us, Joe, about the Kidda recall and what people know about their fire extinguishers, need to know about the fire extinguishers in their home?
I do know that the recall took place. I don't know the exact dynamics of why it did. We get our notifications on recalls actually through the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Any of those that we do receive, we do post to the website and the Facebook page. So we do have the particular, say, models or numbers or whatever comes with that. I have not heard any more from any source to describe what they found for a problem or why they're doing the recall. But certainly, if you've got something that's damaged in shipping, that does need to go back. And, you know, I don't have any information that would help intervening between what she needs to do or they need to do with the company. But certainly, if they're going to have it, they want one that is well-functioning. So definitely get a hold of the company and get it replaced.
An email from Alessandra. Nearly 3 years ago, my 5-year-old daughter had her dress catch on fire around a campfire. Proper clothing is a must around any source of fire. Wood stove, cooking stove, campfire, fireworks. Tight-fitting clothing is best. Hair pulled back. Canvas and wool preferred. Cotton with rayon acts as an accelerant. How terrifying that must have been, Kent. You guys are both nodding.
And my eyes are big. That's awful. I can't imagine that. But one thing is, and this is a little bit of common sense, is we don't always have to have a bonfire that is putting out 5 or 6 foot high flames. You can enjoy roasting marshmallows, having hot dogs, whatever, around a small campfire that can be a foot tall. That's all you need. And we just request that people, you know, keep the size of the firewood small. It doesn't need to be 12-inch logs. It can be, you know, something the size of your wrist or your arm, stove wood, they used to call it. Keep that fire low, and that way it's easy to put it out when you leave.
All right. We do have to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to learn all about biking in Maine, from best cycling destinations to rules of the road. You can email your comments or questions ahead of time if you'd like, or post to our Facebook page. Meantime, we're talking about fire safety today. If you have questions, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Faderly Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at faderlylawmaine.com. and Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, the ambitions and actions of Russia and its leaders are serious concerns these days. From the Robert Mueller investigation into election meddling to Russian involvement in Ukraine and Syria and beyond, Michael McFaul, former U.S. ambassador to Russia, gives us an inside look at Russia and its troubled relationship with the United States and Western Europe on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock.
Canada is striking back at the U.S. with retaliatory tariffs of more than $12 billion.
Canadians are livid. The anger is across the country.
Many are boycotting U.S. products.
Because of comments that were made directly at the government, but also Canadian people.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. The hashtag #BuyCanadian protest against the Trump administration. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how to be smart about fire prevention and safety. Joining me, Joe Thomas, our state fire marshal, and Kent Nelson with the Maine Forest Service. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We have an email from Chris. Is it recommended to put tape on the electrodes of a 9-volt battery when placed in the trash? I've heard these can cause fires if a conductor connects both the positive and negative points.
Get me on that one.
Wow, stumping Joe Thomas. Yeah, That's something.
I have heard of this happening, but usually by the time you dispose of a battery the size of a 9-volt battery, there's not enough juice left in there to be able to do much of anything.
Okay. Rick on Facebook says, the nose knows. If you smell any odd burning smells, such as burnt plastic, check to find where it's coming from. A lot of electrical fixtures, appliances, and equipment are constructed with hard plastic, specifically phenolic, and it will smell if it becomes overheated due to an electrical short circuit or other issue. I recently smelled burned phenolic in my porch and disassembled the overhead lighting fixture to find some wiring had melted and shorted due to overheating. Call in an expert if you cannot isolate or investigate the smell yourself. We have two people nodding right here in the studio with us. We'll go now to John, who's calling from Standish. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I was watching this old house, and they mentioned that there's a new standard for smoke alarms where you have to, the new smoke alarms have both a smoke alarm and a CO2 detector connect as part of the same alarm. And they were saying that that's the new standard. Now, does that mean that I have to go out and change all my smoke alarms now because I have a standalone CO2 detector?
No, what that's actually saying is they're saying that many of your detectors that are coming through from the manufacturers now are built so that they do have a combination of smoke and carbon monoxide. However, each state is going to have its own regulation on how they're applied, and in some cases, the local community can. Even though you've got the capability, that does not mean that you have to go out and now change all of your detectors that you have in place. That being said, I do encourage somebody to make sure that they do have carbon monoxide as well as smoke detectors, especially here in Maine, because we do have a carbon monoxide statute, which many states don't have. But now, as you replace those detectors at their 10-year life expectancy, when you do put a new detector in, it's going to more than likely be that combination detector.
John, thanks for your call. We'll move to South Portland and Marty. Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller.
Great.
I have a question concerning disposal of disposable lighters. Over time, I've run into a number that the flint stops working or gets jammed up some way and you cannot get them to light, but they still have plenty of fuel within them. I've actually spoken with a couple of firefighters and they didn't know what to do. What's a safe way of disposing of those?
The actual capability of it is to be disposed of with household trash. There is not that much in there, and the means by which they actually do disposal of all of the trash that you have, it will not make any difference. I wouldn't hang on to them. I wouldn't just keep them around. Definitely dispose of as you would household trash.
All right, there you go, Marty. We're going to go to Lori, who's calling from Deer Isle. Hi, Lori, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I have a question about standard or old-fashioned fire extinguishers versus the fire extinguishing material you can buy in a can, in a spray can. And I'm just wondering if those are just as good to keep around. That's it. That's my question. I guess I'll listen off the air.
I guess the biggest thing that I would recommend is, number one, that if you do have these types of extinguishers, definitely look on the label and see what the class of the fire is that they're rated for. Every type of different detection, every type of different extinguisher, based on the type of product that's in there for suppression, is rated for certain classes of fire, A through D. And you want to make sure, especially if you're going to use it for an all hazards type of situation, is that at least at a minimum you have A, B, C, and if not, the very best all the way through all of the categories of fire, class of fire.
Martin on Facebook writes, one thing as a business owner I've always done is had the Biddeford Fire Department in for a tour. Bring them in a non-emergency situation so they can see the layout of the building. That's required in certain cities for a building over a certain size, right, Joe? But this is available to everybody who has a commercial building.
I think in this case, I think what he's referring to is it's really a familiarization tour for the firefighters, not necessarily for code compliance of the facility. And the greatest thing about this is, number one, it equates everybody to what's going, from the fire service and the occupants of the building. It gets them to know each other. It provides the opportunity for the firefighters to know where everything is in that building. And come time, should there be a fire in there and that place is filled up with smoke, that pre-incident knowledge is going to be so critical to those firefighters from a safety standpoint. It really is a great thing to be involved in.
And I wanted to add, too, that the Maine Forest Service does a similar thing with some of these communities that are in remote areas. For example, last November, we did a bunch of wildfire risk assessments up near Greenville on a community, and we're going to do a report later this summer on our findings. But it really does help us to know the area, mm-hmm. know the access, know the type of fuels, know where the water sources are. So that's always a good thing. So look at it from both sides.
We'll go to David calling from Freeport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is for a couple of layers on this. First, I've been contacted by the Commodore of my yacht club because I was involved with trying to figure out a way to properly dispose of marine safety flares. Mm-hmm. And he's contacted me and asked me to coordinate disposing of flares properly. I have understood from friends at Casco Bay and others that one flare contaminates 250,000 gallons of water. So I was a little bit surprised to hear the fire marshal talking about the standards for soaking fireworks. I assume they probably have similar chemicals. I guess my question is, can we find a way to properly dispose of the thousands of flares that are
stored? Oh, you're cutting out, David, but go ahead, Joe Thomas. Are fireworks and flares similar? And
well, to some extent they are, but I mean, we're talking different materials. In the case of the flares, we're actually the ones that are taking those in for disposal. And in our case, what we're doing is they're either being incinerated or they're being shipped to a location that dispose of them does industrial disposal of them.
So David's Yacht Club can collect them and take them to the state fire marshal's office?
We come and pick them up, and we will see that they're properly disposed of.
Okay. And you say that soaking flares in water is completely different than soaking fireworks in water.
Yeah, no, fireworks, when we're talking about consumer fireworks, and you're talking at the rating that we are, the soaking of those materials is to make them inert. And then once you have them completely soaked and then dried out to be able to dispose of, they can simply be put into the household trash by EPA and DEP standards.
All right, David, thanks for your call. I'm going to go to Bob in North Berwick. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hello. Several minutes ago, there was a lady that called in about disposing of cloths, wiping material with flammable liquid. And the answer was put it in a closed container, tightly closed. And then as an afterthought, the container could even be metal, and maybe should be, but not definitely. I use linseed oil for conditioning wood. Linseed oil is notorious for heat buildup on the waste materials. You wipe off something with oil on it, get the oil on the cloth, throw the cloth in on the floor, it'll oxidize. The heat will build up and it'll catch fire. Happened over and over and over again. It's notorious. If you put it in a closed container, the heat builds up even more quickly. There's enough oxygen in there to have it oxidize and it'll go. If the container isn't metal, you probably just burned your house down. I was surprised not to hear anybody say anything about linseed oil. Still in frequent use.
Yeah, we did make reference to closed metal containers. Very often using the old paint can and putting the lid right back on it and hammering it down.
And I'm wondering, you're talking about it's the reaction of the oxygen. Would it be helpful to put a bag like that? I'm just thinking out loud here, Joe, to put it in a plastic bag and tie it off and then put it in that can? Does that make a difference? No?
No. In our case, we tell them to put it in that container and put that lid back on there and make sure that the oxygen is reduced.
Okay, great. Thanks, Bob. We'll go to Ted in Waterville. Hi, Ted. Go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. Love Maine calling.
Thank you.
I'm wondering about testing home smoke detectors. I mean, you can press that little button, and it'll tell you if the battery is operating or not.
I'm glad you have this question. This is one of Joe's favorite. Look, he's grinning right now. Ted, after I had Joe on this program before, I went home and held up a match to every single one of my smoke detectors because that's what I need to do. A candle, yeah. I guess I was using.
Yeah, you take that candle, light it, blow it out so that you have the smoke that's coming up off of it and actually detect. Use the detector with the smoke to actually do the test. The button that you're pressing is actually... To be honest, really just testing the sounding device. It's not even really testing the material. Say, if it's an ionization detector, it's not even testing the ability of the ionization chamber to detect anything. It's really just the sound device, the beep, beep, beep that you get. So you really want to take something, and as I suggested to Jennifer, you take something like a candle, you light it, you blow it out, you take the smoke that's coming up off of it, wave it underneath the detector and allow the detector to actually detect smoke, and then you'll know that it's operational.
Ted, thanks for your call. We'll go for Travis in Kingston. Hi, Travis. Go ahead.
Good day. I used to be an instructor for hunter ed and firearm safety here in New Brunswick. Excuse me. And my statement is regarding the storage of ammunition in the home. I presume Maine hunters store just as much as ammunition as New Brunswickers do. And for the safety of the fire responders, I used to tell my classes, if you can get a hold of an ex-military surplus ammo box of substantial thickness, but drill vent holes in it to let the gases escape. Otherwise, you're going to create an IED, and you do want to protect those responding firefighters.
Absolutely. You know, I by virtue of my position, I get just about every newswire and publication that there is in the United States and throughout the world, Canada included, in New Brunswick, that talk about fire safety issues and what's going on in the fire service area. And I have to tell you, I cannot go through a month where I don't read somewhere on this planet where firefighters were held at bay, unable to attack the fire by ammunition that was going off in a house or a garage fire. So you're absolutely correct. It can be a very significant hazard.
Thanks for your call, Travis. And fun to have a New Brunswick call today. Thank you. We have a question from Daphne. We live in a more than 200-year-old house. One window has not been replaced, and vinyl blinds inside the house have turned brown in the same spot, the sun's rays being refracted there. Is there a possibility that's a fire hazard? Is there a treatment?
You know, I would definitely have somebody look at it. You know, I've been around now for almost 45 years here, and I have seen fires that it didn't get to the point where they were actually ignited, but the refraction of light, especially the older homes with the old wavering windows, where they acted like a magnifying glass, and you could actually see burn marks on the windowsills.
When you say someone look at it, her local fire department?
Definitely. At least take a look at it and see if not that is likely the circumstance. And then if it is, my recommendation is replace the window.
Okay. I know before we go, Kent, you wanted to talk about fireworks just a little bit more. A big deal was made in 2011 when Maine made it legal to buy fireworks, but...
Well, many communities, municipalities rather, have banned them. So if you're going to be enjoying fireworks with your family on the 4th of July, just do a double check. Check the website for the town and make sure that they are indeed legal there.
Yeah, you were saying you were just in Auburn last week, right?
Right. They don't allow them there. They knew about this law coming, and they put an ordinance in place. But yet, fireworks are sold all in the surrounding towns. So if you just drive in from a few counties over, you might not even know that they are not legal in Auburn.
So check with your town before setting off fireworks.
And also, or check our website.
Oh, you've got a list.
We've got all of the lists of communities that have sent us copies of their ordinance on the legalities of how they can be used, cannot be used, the times of day that may have changed. All of the local conditions that they have on their ordinance are available on our website.
Great, and we'll put that on our Facebook page and on the Maine Calling website as well. Joe, some of them have really specific, like they're only allowed on certain days of the year,
such as
4th of July and certain hours, things like that. Yeah. So, well, thank you guys both for being here.
Pleasure
it's
always fun.
Always
you're very
a treat
welcome.
To have both of you here. And, you know, people take fire safety seriously, right?
Those are some great questions.
Oh, my goodness. Kent Nelson, whose voice you just heard, a forest ranger specialist for the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. And Joe Thomas, Maine's state fire marshal. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources by visiting MaineCalling.org. Those resources stay on the webpage, so you can look back to a program even from last year if you'd like. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, Cycling in Maine. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.